And welcome to episode 2, part 1 of Philosophy of X here on the Aspect Network. I'm your host, Alex Batts, and I'll be your guide as we take a journey to examine the world of X-Men through philosophy. For this second episode, I wanted to take a deeper dive into probably my favorite X-Men character, and in my opinion, arguably one of the greatest fictional characters of all time, the Master of Magnetism himself, Magneto. There are a lot of incredibly complex and fascinating philosophical areas that can be explored through Magneto, and as you can tell by the title, we'll be exploring the ethics of mutant liberation as a consistent foundational point for the character, but that in itself opens the door for a handful of ideas that we'll get into, including just war theory, the ethics of collective punishment, the paradox of power, and ethical pluralism. Originally, I had wanted to fit all of this into one episode, but as I got through the script, that became very evidently impossible to do while still maintaining the bite-sized episode format that I wanted for this show. So, we're getting our first two-parter, and even splitting things up, this episode is definitely going to be a bit longer than our first episode, but there's just simply too much that needs to be talked about. I'll spend this first episode setting up the need-to-know character info for Magneto, and then we'll get into just war theory. Beyond that, the ethics of collective punishment, the paradox of power that Magneto represents, and his ethical pluralism will all be covered in next week's episode. Before I get into all of those details, I want to give a couple of quick notes that I think are important, as well as some content warnings. I realized after the fact for the Wolverine episode that content warnings would probably be nice to have, so apologies for the oversight there, and we'll get into the content warnings first. I'll be covering anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, genocide, bigotry of a wide variety, murder, war, and a lot of related topics. These are heavy subjects, and I wanted to do my best to approach them with the appropriate level of sensitivity. Secondly, I think it's important to note up front that I am not Jewish. Magneto is inextricably linked to his Jewish ties in regards to his character. He is Jewish. Entertaining the idea of an adaptation of the character that is not that is a fundamental misunderstanding of who he is and why the character works. Because of that, I feel that it's important to note that I am not the best or leading authority on much of what that means for the character. I've done a lot to try to understand why it's so important to his character and to represent my understanding of those ideals as respectfully as I can, but because of the fact that I don't and cannot innately understand the experience of someone who is Jewish, I apologize upfront for any misunderstandings or any offense that I may give. If I say something incorrect or if anyone feels that I'm taking the wrong reading of a situation, I absolutely encourage you to let me know. I'm always looking to learn and be better. The whole point of this podcast is to spread learning, so it'd be really hypocritical of me not to accept that myself. So, with all of that said, let's get into the basics of Magneto as a character before we fully dive into the philosophical side of things. Magneto, born Max Eisenhart, but commonly known as Eric Lenser or Magnus, is the most famous foe for Marvel's X-Men, and arguably the most famous villain in general from Marvel Comics. He first appears in the pages of X-Men No. 1 in September 1963, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. He is the first villain the X-Men face and is the definition of a stereotypical campy foe. To say that Magneto's history is complicated is a bit of an understatement. You'll notice this becoming a theme with each episode. The X-Men have a wild history. All comics have retcons, of course, but it's really truly baked into the core of these stories. A big part of that for Magneto, and admittedly a lot of characters, comes from how the entire line is revamped and recontextualized under the pen of Chris Claremont. Before Claremont, in his classic 60s appearances, Magneto is a caricature. Most importantly, his Jewish backstory as a Holocaust survivor is non-existent. It is not a thing in the comics until Claremont comes around and completely redefines the character. A lot of what Claremont does is recontextualizing and retrofitting an explanation for classic Magneto's very overtly fascist actions, something that would be innately at odds with his now established backstory as a Holocaust survivor. It is impossible to overstate how integral Magneto being a Holocaust survivor is to his character. Every now and then, posts online will come up arguing that What if Magneto was, insert a different allegory for oppression here, survivor or activist, as opposed to being a Holocaust survivor? And sometimes they'll argue that it's because of the sliding timescale, and that by putting him as a child in the Holocaust automatically dates him and makes him older and older as time goes on. These ideas miss the point, though. Being a Holocaust survivor is who Magneto is. It colors and informs everything that he does and everything he becomes. Comics are comics. There are a million ways to explain why Magneto is old as dirt and still kicking it. He's an Omega level mutant, which we'll get more into later, and that's explanation enough. So, without getting too into the weeds of any of Magneto's specific stories, I want to establish the core points of evolution for the character. Obviously, first and foremost, he's introduced as a villain for the X-Men, and he does routinely return to fill that role throughout his history. As much as I'm going to get into the Magneto was right of it all as we go on, it is important to note that Magneto has done terrible, heinous things. There is no way around that. It's a tension that lives at the heart of the character. It's arguably the heart of the character. It's crucial to understand, though, that he is much more than just an antagonist for the X-Men. He is Charles Xavier's closest friend and oldest friend, more than friends also if you really want to read into the subtext, which isn't really all that subtle at times, but that's a different podcast episode. Over time, he evolves to become one of the X-Men's closest and most important allies and even a leader. During one of Xavier's trips to the grave, don't worry, he gets better, Magneto is instated, at Charles's insistence, as the head of Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. Magneto as the headmaster era is one of the most pivotal for the character. It highlights a few key elements of the character: his desire to be better, his uncertainty that he can be or that he deserves redemption of any kind, and the fact that he is, at his core, doing all that he does for the children of mutant kind. In the Krakoan era, which started with House of X and Powers of Ten in 2019, Magneto is established as one of the heads of state for the new mutant island nation of Krakoa. This is, in my opinion, the defining evolution of the character. It's the endpoint that he spent his entire life fighting for in regards to mutant liberation. Krakoa is, in a very real sense for him, security for the future of mutantdom. He's revered among the children of Krakoa. They recognize all that he's done for them to establish this paradise. It's also a reconciliation of the clashing ideologies that both he and Xavier have always held. Xavier compromises far more than Magneto does in the establishment of Krakoa. And I can feel myself slipping into what's arguably more of the philosophical side of things. So I think it's time to just fully dive in. But to summarize the important bullet points for his character, he was a villain, he's done horrible things, but it's rooted in the trauma that he endured as a Holocaust survivor, the fact that mutants are a vilified and hated species, and his desire to ensure that no mutant has to endure the horrors that he, his family, and his people have faced. In this, he eventually becomes an ally and leader for the X-Men, and though his actions can be horrible, he has a righteous end goal. So, with all of that said, after the break, let's really dive into Magneto's philosophy. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Nagin.
And I'm Bree. Enjoying this show on the Aspect Network?
Then check out Viltrumikes, an Invincible podcast.
Each week, we go back and discuss your favorite episodes of the series and review new episodes as they release right on Amazon Prime.
Join us as we travel space, time, and the multiverse with Mark Grayson and discuss one of the most exciting superhero series on TV on Viltrumikes, here on the Aspect Network.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Before the break, I briefly mentioned the fact that Charles Xavier and Magneto hold competing ideologies, specifically in regards to what I'll be referring to as the, quote, human mutant dilemma, end quote. I'm taking this description of the cohabitation of mutants and humans on Earth directly from the pages of House of X number 2. Here's another quote that gives a tad more context to it as Moira describes it in these pages. Quote, "She threw herself into fully understanding what she would eventually call the human-mutant dilemma. When two aggressive species share the same environment, evolution demands either adaptation or dominance," end quote. Moira's role in the Krakoan solution is worth an entire episode or two, so I'm not going to get into that here. What's important for this conversation is having a basic understanding of the two main positions that both Xavier and Magneto have held throughout the majority of their publication history. Again, this is a topic that could warrant an entire episode, and I want to try to stay focused mostly on Magneto here, so in an effort to be relatively concise, I'm just going to put it in the most simple terms, even though it is slightly reductive to both sides. Xavier is an assimilationist. He wants mutants to be able to assimilate or integrate with the larger human population, free of persecution. He dreams of a world in which mutants and humans can cohabitate on the planet Earth peacefully. This is literally the dream of Xavier that is always referenced when people are talking about him. Magneto, however, historically, is a mutant separatist slash supremacist. He does not believe that there is a possible world in which humans and mutants can coexist peacefully, which makes sense given his history. He also believes in the superiority of mutants over humans and holds their lives in higher regard. In his first appearance, he makes grandiose speeches about Homo superior, a now canon colloquial genetic designation for mutants, in relation to Homo sapien, normal humans. He sees mutantum as the rightful inheritors evolutionarily of the planet Earth. They're the next step. Now, there's a couple of important things to note here. First off, as I sort of touched on at the beginning, Magneto's earlier actions, speeches, and stances, pre-Holocaust backstory being established, are at times incredibly tough to fit into his character now. It's trying to square a circle. It feels counterintuitive to have a Holocaust survivor spouting fascist rhetoric about supremacy of one group of people over another. There are instances of writers doing work that explains why he sees things the way that he does, some of which I'll cite later when we get into conversation about his ethical pluralism and conflicting moral values. The thing is, Marvel kind of sides with Magneto. It's become an established plot point in Marvel continuity that, on a long enough timescale, and sidestepping the problem of AI, which is an entirely different can of worms, mutants would become the dominant population on the planet. Magneto is right about them being the inheritors of Earth. The important thing to note is that that's not inherently a bad thing. The reason it's viewed as a problem by extremist humans is due to the othering of mutantdom, viewing that diversity in evolution as a problem to be solved rather than a uniqueness to be embraced. So those are the basic starting points that will inform a lot of Magneto's actions. He is fighting for mutant liberation because, historically, mutants are a persecuted people. The tagline is literally hated and feared. There have, at this point in Marvel's history, been multiple genocides committed against them. And that's not even getting into the genocides that happen in future timelines and alternate realities. As I mentioned earlier, Magneto takes some pretty extreme measures in his quest for mutant liberation. He's not afraid of murder, and he's not swayed by the cost of collateral damage, even when that's measured in innocent human lives. So, is he justified in his actions here? Now, my friends, we finally arrive at some hard philosophy terms and our conversation of just war theory. The arguably definitive text on just war theory is Just and Unjust Wars by Michael Walzer, and for this, I'll be referencing ideas that are found in there, but will be specifically quoting from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy entry for war, for reference and in case you'd like to read more about it yourself. So, to start, what is just war theory? Well, for starters, some people reject the concept of the, quote, morality of war, end quote, with some denying that morality applies at all once the fighting starts. Others posit that no plausible moral theory could license the incredible horrors of war. The first group are sometimes referred to as realists, with the latter group being pacifists. The task of just war theory is to seek a middle path between them, to justify some wars while also attempting to limit them. Realism has some adherents, but on the large, few philosophers find it compelling. The real challenge to just war theory comes from pacifism, and it's crucial to remember from the outset that this challenge is real. The justified war might be a chimera. As you might imagine, things get very complicated very quickly. Contemporary just war theory is dominated by two camps, traditionalist and revisionist. It might be easier to think of traditionalists more as legalists, though, for their main views on the morality of war are led mostly by international law. They seek to provide laws with morally defensible foundations, and then, to quote Walzer, states and only states are permitted to go to war only for national defense, defense of other states, or to intervene to avert crimes that shock the moral conscience of mankind, end quote. Revisionists, however, question the moral standing of states and the permissibility of national defense. They argue for expanded permissions for humanitarian intervention and promulgate civilian immunity. They further contend that combatants fighting for wrongful aims cannot do anything morally right aside from laying down their weapons. It's worth noting that most revisionists are moral revisionists only. This, in essence, means that while they contend that the international laws regarding war are not intrinsically morally justified, for pragmatic reasons, it doesn't make sense to substantially change them. Basically, we should make progress, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. These laws are in place for a reason. To further break things down within contemporary analytical philosophy, there are two ways in which moral and political philosophers think about war. The first, institutionalists, maintain a primary goal of establishing what the institutions regulating war should be. More specifically, we should prescribe morally justified laws of war, which we can then tell individuals and groups to follow these laws. The second approach argues we should first focus on the moral reasons that apply directly to individual groups and actions regardless of the mediating factor of institutions. We tell individuals and groups to act as their moral reasons dictate. Because this group focuses not on the institutions, but rather on the interactions themselves, it's dubbed the interactional approach. Generally, the institutionalist approach is favored by indirect consequentialists and contractualists, with the belief that these institutions are justified in the fact that they will have better long-term results than any feasible alternative institutions. Whereas non-contractualist deontologists and direct or act consequentialists tend to prefer the interactional approach. Their primary question boils down to, what moral reasons bear directly on the permissibility of killing in war? And while the focus on singular killing might seem small in comparison to the larger scale violence and horrors of war, it stands to reason that we typically view killing as the most presumptively wrongful kind of harm. So it follows that whatever arguments one makes to justify killing are likely to also justify lesser wrongs. All of this said, it's important to note that any normative theory of war should pay attention to both what the laws of war should be and also to what we morally ought to do. These are distinct but equally important questions that beg the emergence of a third question. What ought we to do, all things considered, for example, when law and morality conflict? So, I just threw a lot at you, and I don't even really have time to get into the competing camps of consequentialism that I just mentioned in passing. Don't worry, we'll get there eventually, but in an effort to bring things back around to Magneto, we're skipping ahead a little bit in the just war theory conversation. Traditional just war theory combines two sets of principles, jus ad bellum, when to resort to war, and jus in bello, conduct in war. Jus ad bellum typically comprises the following six principles. 1. Just cause. The war is an attempt to avert the right kind of injury. 2. Legitimate authority. The war is fought by an entity that has the authority to fight such wars. 3. Right intention. That entity intends to achieve the just cause rather than using it as an excuse to achieve some wrongful end. 4. Reasonable prospects of success. The war is sufficiently likely to achieve its aims. 5. Proportionality. The morally weighted goods achieved by the war outweigh the morally weighted bads that it will cause. And 6. Last resort or necessity. There is no other less harmful way to achieve the just cause. Typically, the jus in bello list comprises of the following three principles. 1. Discrimination. Belligerents must always distinguish between military objectives and civilians and intentionally attack only military objectives. 2. Proportionality. Foreseen but unintended harms must be proportionate to the military advantage achieved. And 3. Necessity. The least harmful means feasible must be used. While all of these matter to the ethics of war, it'd be a misnomer to view them as a checklist of necessary and sufficient conditions. When properly understood, only proportionality and necessity are necessary for conditions for a war or an act of war to be permissible. Because no matter how badly going to war might fail the other ad bellum criteria, it might still be permissible because it is the least awful of one's alternatives, and so it satisfies the necessity and proportionality constraints. To get an intuitive and easy grasp on necessity and proportionality, let's use an example. If someone threatens my life, then killing them would be a proportionate response. However, if I could stop them by knocking them out, then killing them would be unnecessary and so impermissible. These two constraints have the same basic root, with a few exceptions, that harm is intrinsically bad, so therefore harms that we cause must be justified by some positive reason that counts in their favor, such as a good achieved or an evil averted. Both necessity and proportionality constraints involve comparing the bads caused by an action with the goods that it achieves. They just differ in the kinds of options they compare. So let's talk about how Magneto's actions can be weighted out against the necessity and proportionality constraints. First off, it's worth noting that by definition, we have to take the revisionist and further interactionalist approach when looking at most of Magneto's actions. Because until the founding of Krakoa, he is not operating with the authority of a nation state, but rather on an individual level. And even when Krakoa is founded, it's an entire plot point that not every nation recognizes its sovereignty, and so therefore wanted to be capable of actually declaring war or committing acts of war. So he's an individual and he's acting on his own moral intuitions rather than a decision made by a larger institution. That said, let's start with the ad bellum proportionality principle. The morally weighted goods achieved by the war outweigh the morally weighted bads that it will cause. So I think that this one is pretty straightforward, actually. First off, again, we have to establish that this isn't inherently a war. It's an act of war that Magneto and sometimes his allies are committing, but he's powerful enough to do it alone. As for the weighted goods against the weighted bads, well, as discussed earlier, there have already been multiple genocides committed against mutant kind. The weighted goods caused by Magneto's actions include the preservation of mutantdom and preventing his people from being exterminated. This makes it fairly easy, in my opinion, to justify the bads that his crusade will cause. There can be arguments made that Magneto, and I guess myself in this case, are taking actions to an extreme conclusion that can't be guaranteed. It can't be known for sure that aggressive humans would eventually eradicate all mutants from the planet. But the evidence that we can look at certainly seems to point that way. Orcus, an anti-mutant organization bent on destroying mutantdom, is doing their very best to achieve this end in the comics being published right now. And in this context, mutants had already conceded to just staying on a singular island. Well, also the planet of Mars, but it's not like humans were going to be able to live there en masse anytime soon anyway, but that wasn't enough for humans. Beyond the threat of extinction, I would argue the living circumstances of life for most mutants is one that justifies Magneto's actions in itself anyway. As I said earlier, hated and feared is a common thread in the world of mutants. They live in constant fear for their lives, belittled and subjugated for being nothing more than different from humans. To quote Cyclops from House of X number 1, quote, "My family has spent our entire lives being hunted and hated. The world has told me that I was less when I knew I was more. Did you honestly think that we were going to sit around forever and just take it?" End quote. Now, moving to the necessity constraint, this one is less cut and dry depending on the situation. The constraint posits that there is no other less harmful way to achieve the just cause. So back to our example of if you can stop someone from killing you by knocking them out versus also killing them, you should. Throughout his history, Magneto is definitely guilty of not quite falling in line with this one. He's killed people when he arguably didn't need to. He's harmed civilians when he also arguably didn't need to. There, in theory, could always be a way to achieve the just cause through less harmful or violent means. However, that's what Xavier has always tried to do, and he's failed. It has not worked. Moira even tried to do a myriad of different things through 9 different lifetimes, and it still failed. We are shown example after example that maybe, probably, Magneto does need to go to these extremes to achieve the justified cause of mutant security and prosperity. There's a scene at the end of House of X number 1 where a national ambassador has brought a gun to the meeting with Magneto. When Magneto goes to dismantle it, the man argues that he wasn't going to use it, that it was just for his own protection. Magneto replies that that's always how it starts. One of the Stepford Cuckoos asks if she should show the man out, to which Magneto replies, quote, "No. Some would be offended at a wolf presenting as a sheep, but I have learned hard lessons from your kind, so I know the truth. You are all wolves," end quote. Magneto has experienced firsthand, both through his survival of the Holocaust and through mutantkind's continued unwavering persecution, the horrific lengths that humans will go to punish those they have decided to other in the means of achieving their own ends of control, and he will not stand for it. So, in conclusion, Magneto was right, and with that, we will continue our discussion next week. Thank you so much for tuning in to this giant-sized episode of Philosophy of X, and be sure to tune in next week as we continue to analyze Magneto, including diving more into the ethical considerations of collective punishment, the paradox of power that Magneto embodies, and the ethical pluralism that he demonstrates. You can find me online at APBatman with 2 T's, and please be sure to subscribe here to The Aspect on YouTube and any platform where podcasts can be found. Please give us a like, leave a comment, and turn on that notification bell so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Twitter/X, Instagram, and TikTok at The Aspect Co. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.